This meeting of the Energy Communications and Cybersecurity meeting is called to order. Amy, please call the roll.
Chair Joe Lombardo.
Here.
Vice Chair Lamarca. Democratic Ranking Member Joseph.
Present.
Representatives Alvarez.
Here, ma'am.
Antone.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Cassell.
Here.
Chambliss.
Here.
Clemens.
Here.
Duggan.
Here.
Fernandez Barkeen. Gossett Seidman.
Here.
Griffiths.
Yes, ma'am.
McFarland.
Here.
Robinson. Jaeger.
Here.
Okay, thank you, Amy. And remember to everybody in the please silence your phones and electronic devices. And please turn on the mic when you're ready to speak. All right, so today we're going to kind of keep it a cybersecurity theme. We're going to have a couple of speakers. Garrett Roberts, he is the general counsel of Highlands County. He'll be up first. He's going to talk about their ransomware attack that they experienced this year. And then we have our state CISO, Jeremy Rogers, and he's from the Florida Digital Service. So Garrett Roberts, if you please approach.
Sorry about that. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair, for inviting me. And thank you, committee, for hearing about cybersecurity. It's probably one, at least in my opinion, one of the most important issues you're going to address as a legislature. We are increasingly having more data and privacy online. Commerce has become completely online. And disruption of that has ripple effects that are felt both in monetary impact as well as supply chain and providing critical infrastructure to your constituents. So the grim reality is there are sophisticated, highly intelligent, well-funded, in my opinion, terrorists out there that are seeking to do harm to your constituents. It's not only your constituents, it's also government agencies that can be in there as well. Your constituents' lives will forever be changed. Their businesses will forever be changed. Their privacy, their data will be out there. Ransomware attacks are scary. They're on the rise. Is a multi-million dollar industry. A lot of times the attacks come from very sophisticated entities, oftentimes outside the United States, where it's hard to prosecute them. So it's becoming increasingly important to make sure you have the protections in your agency. And just because you think you have the protections, these are highly skilled individuals who put forth these attacks. And it's just an extremely difficult type of event to try to deal with. So the businesses will be changed. These events don't last a couple days, and then your business goes back online. These take months, even years. Some of the businesses will never be able to come back from a ransomware attack. And they're asking for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, to get your data back. That is your business now. Everything is online. So unfortunately, last year in May, the Highlands County Sheriff's Office fell victim to a ransomware attack. There was a terrorist organization out of Eastern Europe that had a ransomware attack that hit our agency. I'm here to tell you, it is one of the most difficult things that we can face. A sheriff's office provides really critical life-saving services to our public. We also provide dispatch for fire, EMS, and law enforcement services. So So when these tariffs hit our organization, it had a significant impact on our citizens. But understand, it's not only sheriff's offices, it can be the state government. It can be hospitals. There is a tremendous amount of data out there when you think about not being able to use the internet to do your business, not having access to any of your records, no longer being able to use your computer, not having email, not having a phone system, and still needing to be able to provide critical services. So last May, we were the victim of a ransomware attack. We had a plan. We had a contingency plan. We had backups. The backups were supposedly impenetrable. They infiltrated those systems. So it's like we had a plan. I figured that we could start this PowerPoint with a infamous person about having backup plans. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. So you can have a plan. A lot of people don't have plans. Even if you have a plan, that doesn't mean it's going to go correctly. We had backup systems. These are very intelligent, highly sophisticated groups that run reconnaissance on your systems and will find a way to get in. So ransomware, just very generally, is a type of malicious software or malware that prevents you from accessing your computers, files, systems, or networks, and demand that you pay a ransom in their return. So our story, the Highlands County Sheriff's Office, a ransomware actor on May 10th of last year was able to embed software and allow reconnaissance in our systems before they actually attacked. This is a typical strategy that they put forward to give them time to analyze your system. They want to know how to hit your system the hardest, the quickest, and to provide the most destruction they can. So over the next 2 weeks, the reconnaissance occurred, and they had our system somewhat figured out of how they can implement the attack to provide the most damage. During this time, they also got administrator credentials for our network, which is important. On May 26th, at approximately 11 p.m., an employee at the jail noticed an issue with the computer, notified IT. They took appropriate measures quickly, and this started the Thursday night before Memorial Day weekend. These groups do not discriminate. They do not discriminate against you based on the type of business you have, whether you're an individual, a government entity. They are out for money, and they're out to take your data and manipulate that to be able to pursue their financial goals. They also implement these attacks, usually nights going into weekends, so that these computer systems are able to completely encrypt your system. And when you come back on Monday, there's nothing there. So despite immediate measures being taken, the damage had occurred. They had encrypted our entire system. Our backups that were supposedly impenetrable were impacted. They were erased. We are a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year organization. We have to provide critical life-saving skills to our citizens. And we were still able to do that. The sheriff Sheriff Blackman did a fantastic job, and the staff at the Highlands County Sheriff's Office ensuring that none of our citizens wanted for any services. But I'll go through a few of the things that we had to do to still be able to provide those services and explain to you how significant of an event it is, and maybe the need and the impact that this committee can have and its importance to be able to highlight these issues and make sure that appropriate actions are being taken on a statewide level to be able to address these issues. So they had our attention, right? They eventually made contact with us and tried to extort $2.5 million from the citizens of Highlands County and the citizens of the state in Bitcoin to decrypt the data. Now, there's no guarantee that they are going to actually provide you a key that will decrypt that data. Once you give them the money, you're operating on faith that a criminal, in essence, a terrorist organization, is going to give you your data back. You're also acting on hope that they're not going to release it on the dark web, where there can be significant amount of sensitive information. Depending on what type of agency you are or business, there can be a large amount of financial documents. There can be health documents. There can be, you name it, it's out there, criminal information. So they demanded $2.5 million from the citizens of Highlands County. Sheriff Blackman, that was not the look on his face, but we declined to acquiesce to their request and did not agree to the extortion of our citizens. But understand, some of your constituents, they will. They need that data. They need to get back online. Their entire businesses and livelihoods are on those computers. It's encrypted. They can't access it, and their lives are forever being changed. So, with the sheriff's office, we have lots of sensitive data. Like the state, there's a lot of information that you hold. Like many of your constituents and their businesses, they have a lot of information that they have to show you the importance and the significance of encrypting this data and trying to export this data. You can see how this sensitive data is important, that that is not taken from your constituents. So, what to expect immediately after an attack? Panic, right? You want to pick up a phone and call somebody. Phones don't work. You want to get on your computer. You want to see how hard you're hit. You're not able to. You want to look at your cameras. Make sure you're safe. You don't have cameras anymore. The employees are going to be distraught. This is not something that they've been through before. This is truly a critical incident on behalf of the sheriff's office, but it will be for any one of your constituents in which you live and their businesses. This will change their lives. So we had to come up with all kinds of, let's call them workarounds, or ways to still be able to provide those critical functions and services to our citizens. And we were absolutely able to do that. But it was very difficult, very difficult. And this is one of those situations where, again, I said it takes months or even years to rebuild these systems, to get your people back online. And as an example, it took us 6 months to be able to get payroll back online. Fortunately, we had some systems that were saved offline that were able to eventually bring back a significant amount of our data and our systems and get back on. But it took months to be able to get there. It took an incredible amount of work to get there. So, operational considerations. We're a sheriff's office. We had to change how we do things. If you look at this picture, for a short period of time, our computer-aided dispatch was not working. That's fire, EMS, law enforcement. There were stickies, little tabs, that were reflecting where law enforcement was, where EMS was, where fire was. A ransomware attack, like I said, will forever change how I look at cybersecurity. It's one of those situations where I've heard about it. I heard about it in a lot of magazines, how it can become a significant event. But until you're in it, you don't think it can happen to you, even if you have a plan. But once you're in it, you're in the middle of an absolutely critical incident that will change your life. So just continuing on with some of the things that did not work that we had to have workarounds. We have a medical unit. We had to figure out how to provide those prescriptions and be able to provide services to the inmates. And we have that duty to them, and we were able to do that. I say this to say, this could be one of the hospitals in your district. This could be a bank. This could be one of the major businesses in your area that get hit that employ a significant amount of citizens that may never be able to go back to their job, that may lose a paycheck for a couple months while they're in the midst of this and they can't get their systems back up. It could also be the state of Florida. You could face something like this, and it's the level of expertise that these individuals have is absolutely amazing. So, data loss that can occur. It's not limited to one area. It can happen to all kinds of things. This is just a kind of example of some significant data that can be lost. Again, we were able to pull some of this information back up through an offline system, but it has taken months to recuperate. We are still trying to pull systems, not significant, but are still working to pull some systems back online almost a year later. So, thank you for your time. This was our story. It's scary, and hopefully it brings forward to you the importance of this. It's not theory. It actually happens. It happens to the constituents of the state of Florida every single day, your businesses, and has a significant financial impact on the state of Florida. And with that, I can answer some of the questions you might have, but due to the nature of the attack, there's some questions I probably will not be able to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Roberts, I appreciate you telling the story. It brings to life, I think, something that has unfortunately probably happened in all of our districts from one municipality to another. So it's bold of you to talk to us, number one. It's bold of you coming from a law enforcement agency to admit that you had a problem. Thank you for coming to share your story. How big is your IT department?
We have five individuals in our IT department.
It looks like Highlands County is like 100,000 residents, is that right?
Yes, ma'am, just over 100,000.
After the attack, what kind of reports did you make, and to who and when in the timeline?
So there's a significant amount of reporting that's required. One of the things that we did have, we had insurance for ransomware, and we had some resources at our fingertips that were critical at that time. one of which was some privacy attorneys that I'm an attorney. That's great. But I don't specialize in this. I don't do this every single day. And there's a significant amount of federal reporting on top of some state reporting that is required. And they were able to walk us through some of that, those requirements, which was very, very helpful. We did report to the state of Florida, but this was just prior to the, was it 7026? Was the House bill last year, but it was just prior to that bill being enacted.
Yeah, so some elements of that bill have like 12-hour reporting requirements, 48-hour reporting requirements, and it doesn't take effect, I think, until January of 24 of next year. So I don't ask these questions as to like test your compliance. I ask them more to illustrate what that reporting burden looks like for you guys. Because you're right, there's a significant amount of federal reporting you have to do. I actually think you have to report to the local sheriff, which is yourself, so you got that one at least. Do you remember which state reports you made or the privacy attorneys made?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to say that here today of each one of those, but I could get you that information.
After, so this was in May, so this is over 6 months ago. What remediation steps have you guys done as a department as a result to harden yourself?
We have taken considerable amount of steps to ensure this doesn't happen again. Based on the nature of this meeting and it being public, I don't necessarily want to reveal every step that we've taken and the security measures that we have. Those would be exempt under Florida law and might assist one of these, again, terrorist organizations, in my opinion, to attacking another government entity and even ourselves.
You mentioned a couple times that your backups were supposedly impenetrable. What does that mean? Are you guys in the cloud? Do you have local data servers?
They couldn't be encrypted. And so through reconnaissance, the ransomware actors were able to determine that. And rather than trying to encrypt them, which they weren't able to, whatever means they were able to erase those backup drives.
Are your backups, and this actually might be dependent on whether it's the jail or, you know, different elements of your records, but are you on the cloud?
I guess at this time, I'm not going to answer some of those questions in a public setting, just to make sure we can keep the security and integrity of our system.
That's fair. Thank you, Chair.
Hey, and some of the questions he may not answer, so as you see. So if you can get offline or chat with them after, you know, absolutely, if they decide. So. Next up is Rep. Antone.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your presentation. Just one quick question. Do you have a public records exemption on your security plans for how you protect your systems?
Yes, sir, we do. Absolutely. There's a couple different exemptions that could apply, but yes, we do, which is very important that we're able to have the documents of what happened and how it happened and those not be released so as to show how it can be replicated and other agencies can be hit in a similar manner, and as well as the steps that you took to remediate and try to harden your system. And if a ransomware actor were to find that out, they would be able to identify those types of systems to go back into your software, your system, and attack you again, and this time probably easier than before, knowing what you have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your presentation, and thank you for, I guess, the work that you have been doing to kind of prevent this on a preventive measure. I know there's some things you can't tell us, but I'm just curious, what do you propose this committee do in response to preventing future cyber attacks?
That is a great question. I do not have the answer to that. I would like to preference some of this with, I am not an IT expert. I was somewhat thrust into this, and it has been quite the learning curve. So I know the chair has significant cyber experience, and some of the IT professionals for the state and other government agencies and private companies out there would have a much better answer than anything I have. My wife laughs at my IT expertise, but that's a great question, and really I think that's coming back to the importance of this committee, of what you are able to do to protect your citizens, to protect this state and the integrity of your systems, and be able to move forward in a more secure manner in this increasingly digital age.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for being here. I'm also an attorney, and my husband also laughs at my placement sometimes on the Cybersecurity Committee. So please bear with me if some of my questions are a little naive, or if they're not anything that you can answer. But obviously, you know, the best way for us as a committee to learn is to learn through your experience. Were you able to find out what the vulnerability was within the system as to why you weren't as protected as you all thought you were?
We were. With the insurance that we had, immediately there were privacy attorneys that came to assist, but there was also forensic professionals, a whole host of people to help get the systems back online. And yes, they were able to determine how they got into our system, things that we have hardened. But again, just in this public setting, I wouldn't be able to answer exactly how they got in and how we hardened that. But I can have a discussion with you or any of the members after at some other time as to those particulars.
Thank you. You gave some examples of the information that was compromised, and I'm grateful that you were able to save the servers that you saved. Of the ones that were compromised, what can you give us more specifics of what was on there that can be disclosed and not subject to any security compromising, and what steps you took, if any, to mitigate, you know, what that information could be used for?
Sure. By compromised, it was encrypted. And with that, we're just not able to read the data any longer. It's, I don't know if it's zeros and ones that we can't read or what it comes down to on a technical level. But we're not able to read that data in a format that makes sense. But to that extent, I think in a public setting, that's as much of that question, unfortunately, as I can answer just due to the setting.
Follow up.
Today. But again, any of the members, I'd be happy to have a conversation with you afterwards in a non-public event.
Absolutely. To the extent that you're aware, do you know if whoever did this additional encryption is able to decipher it? Well, obviously they're able to decipher their own encryption, but are they able to process and access the data themselves?
Well, the ransomware actor, it's their encryption. Theoretically, they would have the key to whatever software that is. But that's also assuming they were able to extract data from your system and get that outside your system.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With the relationship with the Sheriff's Department, the County Commission, local municipalities, and their jurisdictionals, Did you share best practices so that there might not be other attacks within the community or the county?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just a quick question. Do you all have an internal policy that governs employees bringing their own external drives and inserting them into computers?
Yes, Representative, we do. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Garrett. And, it's not easy to bring, it's not hard to find somebody that are willing to come up and kind of share an incident like this, and we hear about them all the time throughout the state, but we rarely get to have a conversation with somebody who dealt with it on the legal aspect of it. And I wanted to bring him to kind of show this is real, right? It really happens. It's something that we hear about, but now we have a face to an incident that was able to kind of detail out how devastating these ransomware attacks or any types of attacks can be to state systems, to local government systems, to our businesses. So thank you for telling us your story. And please stick around. If anybody has any questions, we'd appreciate that they can have an offline conversation with you. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir. All right, next up, we got Mr. Rogers. I just wanted to say Mr. Rogers. He is the state CISO. And he's been with us for almost a year, right? About a year. He's going to talk to us about the Florida Digital Service and about some of the things that we've passed previously and some of the updates. And you're recognized.
Committee. Again, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeremy Rogers. I am the state CISO and just passed a year, so good memory on that, Mr. Chair. Just for a little bit of intro on myself, for those who I haven't had a chance to speak to yet, 20 years experience with a large technology integrator and company, private industry, a little bit of time before that with a local internet provider down in South Florida. Mr. Chair, like yourself, I serve in the military reserve as well. In my case, it's with the Navy. So several stints with Navy Information Operations Centers. I'm a cryptological reserve officer, cryptological warfare officer with the reserve, some time at U.S. Cybercom and a defensive offensive coordinator, and also some time in information operations overseas. To give a little bit of history on state technology and the Florida Digital Service, so the Florida Digital Service it was preceded by four previous organizations of state technology. All four of those instantiations have been abolished by the legislature previously. There have been a number of CIOs for the state. I work for our current CIO. I appreciate that Governor DeSantis is serious about getting cybersecurity right. I'm appreciative of the legislative support that we've had, whether it's been the state cybersecurity bill two sessions ago, 1297, the local cybersecurity bill, I believe 7055, and the ability to share information and partnership is a big reason why I came to this role, and a big reason why I'm appreciative of the ability to serve here. I think it's noteworthy to acknowledge that Florida does lead in a lot of ways from a legislative and governor's stance and support. I get to speak to my peers across the country, the different state CISOs, and we are seen as, and we get asked a lot, what are you guys doing with this, with the Cyber Advisory Council? What are you guys doing for support of locals? So Florida is quickly moving from, I would say, not first to leading the pack in legislation, appropriations, and how we're pulling things together. I work for the state CIO. I think some of you recognize him. He served as a member previously in tech policy. Florida Digital Service reports up through the Department of Management Services with Secretary Allende, who himself served on the Department of Homeland Security and in energy and cybersecurity roles. And before I get into the cybersecurity portion, I just want to expand a little bit on the digital service. So the digital service is composed of kind of four big pillars. There is the chief data office. So where is all of the state's data? How does that data come together for interoperability? Of course, a lot of cyber goes with that. Where the data goes, as the previous speaker says, security must follow. There is a chief... the chief operating office, which is where state We find budget entities, grants, as well as the rulemaking, which we're responsible for at a cyber level. There's the Office of Service Experience. We are the Florida Digital Service. So how do we partner rather than tattletale and look to catch people? How can we work together to build up state cybersecurity as a whole? And then last, my Office of State Cybersecurity. So Florida statute. In Florida statute, we're responsible for providing some big initiatives to the state agencies. The Cybersecurity Operations Center, what we call the CSOC, which is responsible for monitoring, response, intelligence sharing, responding to incidents at a statewide level, now supporting the locals, recovery, and safeguarding rules and policy. With Bill 7055, the state local cybersecurity bill that was passed last year by your initiative, Mr. Chair, we're also responsible now for protecting local governments, leaning in, reviewing their cybersecurity plans, and making sure that the state as a whole has a strong cybersecurity posture. I would say that our job at the Digital Service is to provide information reports so you, the members, can provide appropriations, legislature, policy for us to execute. We are looking to drive our organization through math and scorecards. We realize that we're accountable to you, and we're looking to provide some of that data today in what you'll see on some of these later slides. I want to stress that at the Digital Service and in our Office of Cybersecurity, we're going to be partners with the agencies, even when that may be inconvenient or difficult. So we've got multiple enterprise agencies across the state. We look to partner with them, help them, put them in the best security posture that we can be for response to stuff. And if I had to make any observation of this, I would just say that it's light on enforcement. There's a lot of things that we can do and have to do, and on the next slide, what the agencies have to do, but there's only so much teeth that we have. It really requires cooperation, partnership, and working together. On the agency side of what's required, in a lot of ways it mirrors what the state has to do, but a little bit of more on the execution for their side. So first, they must designate an information security manager. Each agency head must do this, or an ISM, as we'd call it. They must stand up, if there's an incident response, a cybersecurity incident response team, or a CSIRT. They have to conduct risk assessments, provide cybersecurity plans, both operational and strategic, have to implement those plans, and then provide remediations. This is a big ask of multiple agencies. So at the Digital Service, we look to provide kind of centralization, a common operating picture, so you can see what that security looks like across the entire state enterprise. Previous speaker from the Sheriff's Office mentioned he was thrust in. He's not a cyber expert. It's a common occurrence, whether it's at state agencies or local governments. You find yourself in a cyber situation pretty quickly, and without that cyber background, it can be high stress. We recognize that. We see that with our own state agencies. It's our job, it's my team's job, to be those cyber experts, pull in the resources as needed, and put everyone in chance to be as successful as they can before, during, if it happens, and after an incident. To stress again, by statute, agencies must have an information security manager who reports to the agency head. This is important to kind of call out. Those ISMs don't report to me. They report up through their agency. The agency CIOs report up through their agency. They don't report to the state CIO. And I know there's some confusion about that sometimes. Unlike the state Florida Digital Service, where you have to have, by statute, a state CISO, a state chief data officer, each agency is not required to have a CISO or a CDO. So that's kind of some of the differences between a state agency and the Digital Service. A little bit getting into the metrics of where we stand in both headcount and initiatives. So on staff, we have 70 FTE total for the Digital Service. In the Cybersecurity Office, in my office, we're allocated 29 full-time employees, FTEs. Total appropriations, almost $150 million, and then cybersecurity specific for the year, about $62.2 million. On the agency collaboration side, and this is important to stress, going into this year, the amount of cybersecurity collaboration across state agencies, zero. Zero. There had never been agencies really working together, a central picture. Mr. Chair and members, your support of that state cybersecurity bill has made a lot of this possible to actually have some collaboration and information sharing and shared response going. We would much rather learn from our mistakes, learn from each other, than have them repeated over and over again. Where we stand now, we have all we have 32 agencies bought in, collaborating in real time on cybersecurity in some way, shape, or form. 9 agencies who are, I would say, fully bought in with our integrated service offerings on cybersecurity, and 23 who are participating in some way, shape, or form or other, who embraced a product or two. Getting a little bit more into the threat data that we're seeing right now, and I'll stress, as we roll out these initiatives, you know, starting, if you had brought me up here a year ago, this would all be zero, right? We didn't know any of this stuff. We didn't know what it looked like across the whole state enterprise. With the governor's leadership and legislative leadership, we find ourselves here where the lights are starting to come on, the sensors are starting to come on, but there's still some room to grow. So total threat sightings for the 6 agencies fully plugged in, over 2 million. Total investigations currently open, 172. And now I'll tie this back to our, if you tie this to our headcount directly, so if every single person who works for a state CIO was working an investigation, and you could equate this to the sheriff's office who spoke, this is, you know, you'd have 2.4 open investigations per person. You take that to just the cybersecurity personnel on my shop, that'd be almost 6 investigations per person. And then if you want to break that out across the threat sightings being where we're seeing a possible bad internet address or bad known actor, scanning, indicator of compromise that's tied into something that has to look into, not an open incident, but a threat that has to be pulled into per person at the digital service, almost 30,000 per person in the Office of Cybersecurity. If I was fully manned up, almost 70,000. So we've got a lot of work to pull things together. We'll talk a little bit on how we're working on cleaning some of this stuff up. I want to take a step back and talk about what is our approach to cybersecurity for the state of Florida. So there's kind of 3 ways you could look at it. One, you could go with a single vendor. You could say, we're going to go with vendor X or vendor Y. We're going to put all of our eggs in that vendor's basket. They all play nicely together, right? That vendor makes their things. But we really want to avoid that because we don't want to be vendor locked to a single vendor. We don't want to have all of our eggs in a basket, whether it's a technology issue, a security issue, a woke CEO who may be threatening to pull out of the state due to a company. Just not a good idea to tie everything to one company. The second approach is to go with a system integrator. So you could go with a major integrator who said, you know what, you don't have to worry about that problem, write a check, and we'll handle all of your security. That usually comes with things like change requests and I don't know if you're familiar with the term GOTS or COTS, government off the shelf or commercial off the shelf, but a GOTS solution is usually a big, complex piece of technology that is very reliant on the company that you are paying to do that. And we don't want to be locked in, whether it's with a single integrator or a single vendor. The approach that we've taken for the Free State of Florida is to really look at a multi-vendor integrated marketplace or security integrated marketplace. And that's looking to try out, test, do proof of concepts, fail fast and quick if we need to at the concept level. And then as we prove it out, roll that out across the state enterprise and make that available for all of our state enterprise agencies and soon to be our local agencies, our local governments, as we're going out. A strength of this approach is we are embracing the ownership and responsibility for our security strategy. We answer to you guys, we answer to the governor, but at the end of the day, Florida and Florida agencies own their security. And we see this as the best way for a lasting, cost-efficient program. Now, talking about, as I mentioned a year ago, there was no collaboration, there's no integration. So where we started out, and this is, as I was coming on board, this was just starting to get launched. And this wouldn't have been the spot where I would have started necessarily, but it was taking advantage of, I would say, the landscape on how it was laid out, playing the ball as it lies in some way for the best shot. So we had 10 agencies who had LBRs, legislative budget requests, to advance their productivity suite, their productivity software, secure it, secure their old mail servers. CIO was able to take that, get that 10 up to 21, to put all of their productivity software, kind of your day-to-day working. If you're just a general person using a computer, think like your PowerPoint, your email, your Word, get them all to the same level, get the incidents that are spun out from that security suite into one spot where we finally have a joint view across the organization and really address some of the issues that we had been seeing the year before, things around email servers, phishing issues, and so on. Now, kind of the phase 2 that we find ourselves in, the core functions of our CSOC are what you see here. It started with asset discovery. And as an example, one of the first meetings that I held as we've polled all of our information security leaders from all the agencies, I said, raise your hand, and these are state agencies, raise your hand if you're comfortable with knowing the number, type, all the devices that you have on your network. Let's just say not a lot of hands went up. And it clearly showed that there was a need to quickly identify what is on the Florida information networks. What are the assets that are there? It's hard to protect what you can't see. It's hard to patch what you can't see. It's hard to put a strategy together when you don't know what you're trying to protect to begin with. So pretty serious investment in asset discovery, whether that's what we call, I don't want to use too much tech jargon, but agent-based. Think about something that's sitting on your device, network-based, kind of sitting on the wire, listening to what's on the device, or what we'd call internet-facing or outside-in. So what it looks like from outside, looking in to the state of Florida network systems from the outside in. And we're using that to quickly identify what our attack service looks like, what the devices are, where we need to improve, and basically turn on the lights. We invested in several endpoint detection response. Think about how you're protecting your endpoints, how you're protecting your mobile devices, how you can quickly see if something's going bad on that device itself. Hopefully cut it off, make sure it doesn't move horizontally or vertically up and out across the state network systems. Managed SOC, Security Operations Center Solutions and Services. So think of this as kind of a triaging of level one incidents. You saw how many investigations and threats that we're seeing. Even if our team was fully staffed up and drinking a lot of coffee, it would be very hard to work through all of those things. So how can we bring service providers in to at least do a triage, knock out a scope one, and pull together a common operating picture? Content delivery network, how can we protect the Florida-facing websites? How can we eventually get them to maybe all uniform.gov? But more importantly, how can we make sure they're not knocked offline by bad actors, that we get some metrics across all of those sites, and that we've got general availability for our government services? Training. You want to train how you fight. So we invested in a company providing a cyber range. So you could do things like tabletops. Think about sitting down as an exercise. And so when, you know, an incident happens, you're not trying to figure out, okay, what's our incident response plan say? Who do I call? What do I do? Because it is very stressful in the heat of the moment. So going through that and working through it. And then also doing some things, what we would call red team, blue team, or, you know, blue team on the defensive side, red team with the service provider kind of acting and seeing where you can feel comfortable protecting your networks and where you need to improve, get additional training, move on from there. And then last, some licensure and credential access. We've seen as employees offboard and, or onboard and offboard and move across agencies, you don't always turn off the accesses that they may have had at their previous jobs. And that is a vector that can be an issue for possible exploitation. Diving a little deeper into what some of our metrics and scorecards look like at the Digital Service. And again, this is just kind of the beginning of where we're coming on board. First, I'll say, you know, we are in a public setting here. If we need to go deeper than what you see here, you know, there's no attribution. We're not talking agencies and stuff, but we could always take it offline if we need to go a little deeper than this. But you can see we're starting to build out what the picture looks like for the state enterprise. Again, without all of your leadership previously on this and going in the future, this would have been a report that was put together across over 30 agencies. Some of them would have had a number, some wouldn't have. We're starting to shine the light and realize where we need to invest, where we need to protect, where we need to go into the next phases of cybersecurity. So really, I would just consider this as a beginning of insight. Some of the challenges and the solutions that we're looking at. So again, you know, we were starting from scratch. It would be challenging to find an organization, you know, $111 billion organization, which is what the state of Florida is basically, a Fortune 20 company, if you were to look at it on a revenue basis, and that's not even incorporating local governments, county governments. That had never really done cybersecurity across the whole organization. You know, that's a challenge. In some ways, it's also an opportunity. So we knew that we came in blind, and we're working on illuminating that. We can see some stuff now, but I'd highlight it's some stuff. We know there's a need for agency-specific risk assessments. This is something that the cyber task force initially had provided as guidance. It's hard to know where we want to go without having a common picture of what the risk is for this. And I will also say on the solution sides, we're really working on building out our partnerships. Florida Department of Law Enforcement by statute and in practice is a partner of ours. So anytime we run into incident response, we're working with them. On the workforce side, it's been a challenge and also a big focus to building out our team. As mentioned, we need to be the experts to answer the call for any state agency, for any local government when that call comes in. Myself, I joined a year ago. I moved my family up here from South Florida, came out of private industry because it was a great opportunity to take what's kind of a greenfield in some ways from cybersecurity and build it in a joint unified environment. We're building, I would say, C-level executives or A-level players, you know, C-suite leadership team, A-plus players on the cyber side. A couple of our recent hires, one out of Air Force Cyber stood up the SOC on the Air Force side out in San Antonio, some time at Spacecom, 2 years in the consulting side. Another key hire on the strategic side. And the first one's Leo Schoonover, second Warren Sponholds leading. Former CIO at one of our agencies who was really leaned forward in providing all of the security information that we need. So we're looking to really grow out the team and bring that talent to where it's needed. And then last, a challenge. We know that you saw some of the numbers that we're getting on the threats and the incidents and the stuff. We know we've got to get deeper on the tuning. We've got to get automation where we can. We've got to get those systems as finely tuned as we can. To talk about some of the wins from last year where we've gone, so we launched our first statewide cybersecurity plan. We did a 2022 cybersecurity statewide plan, laid out the future where we want to go over the next 1, 2, 3 years. Where we think the state needs to continue, where there's some programs we may want to step back a little bit, and where we need to put our foot on the gas. We brought up a real-time training capability, the ability for our agency response teams to go through and practice so when they get a potential incident, they're not figuring out the first time. We drafted our first incident response plan and shared that with the agencies. We stood up cybersecurity working groups across all of the agencies, so it's not Digital Services saying you must do this. It's how can the agencies come together, be part of the solution, be part of the planning, and then embrace it. We changed what we call our agency security operational and strategic plans, or ASOPs for short. This was a process that before we came along and changed it was basically state IT hounding each agency to fill out this really long Excel spreadsheet. Each agency would fill out the sheet, and honestly, would just get stuck in a folder, and you wouldn't get any reporting or pulled out of it. So we're looking to knock down that bureaucracy where we can. We streamlined the process and made it so we can get actually valued intelligence joint operation picture across that. And then a couple things I'd like to highlight that aren't on this slide is we've been tapped to be part of leadership transition team. So with Commissioner Mark Glass, he had asked my boss, Jamie Grant, hey, can you help out with the leadership team from a cyber perspective, from a CGIS perspective, from an IT perspective? And my boss said, Jeremy, I think you're the right person for this. So to be part of that, especially with our partnership with FDLE, was a good initiative and something that I don't think you would have seen in the past. We had our first, so this was an interesting one, going into the elections, Department of State's CISO at the time resigned. I think it was like the day before the primary or 2 days before the primary. So not where you want to find yourself necessarily going into an election. We tapped one of our members, Jason Bertock, who was leading our network security initiatives, and said, hey, Jason, we can't afford to lose you on our team really now, but it's important that we support Secretary Byrd of the Department of State. So we had our first team mobilization from one agency to the other to stand in during a critical time, got through with a great secure election. And when that was over, the member came back, and now they've had the time to hire and train up a member over at State. And then the last thing I'll hit on, Chairman, and I think this was one where you led as well, ESF 20, or Emergency Support Function 20, is an emergency support function through the Department of Emergency Management based around cybersecurity. So we have a liaison on my team who partners with Department of Emergency Management. And when we saw the Hurricane Ian come up, all those ESFs got stood up. So our team had a great opportunity to step in, whether it was with the Starlinks and providing connectivity across the area that was affected and missing connectivity, set up some of the governor's initiatives around missing people or help that was needed in very real time. It kind of went from an ESF 20 cybersecurity to an ESF cybersecurity and digital. I was excited to be part of that. Building on that success from 2022, areas that we're looking to go, as the state chief information security officer, it's my job to help really quantify risk, measure risk, attach, risk to, you can't protect everything 100% all the time. So where do you focus on that risk? We've really got to get to that. And then again, kind of going to our previous speakers, like it goes back to not what's just the risk of your IT system, but how does that risk play into your core services? So if you're a sheriff, that your core services are protecting the public and providing for jails and those counties that do that. So how do we tie risk, cybersecurity risk, to our agencies, our state agencies' key functions? And we would do that through what we'd call a GRC, or Governance Risk and Compliance Program. In the state of Florida, we're very tied to the NIST cybersecurity framework. And I really want to just stress that we're trying to hit that heavy emphasis on risk to the business and how we go on addressing that with the cyber assessments. We're working with Chief Inspector General Melinda Miguel on setting out what these assessments should look like. And when we go to these agencies, it's not, hey, we got you. We're not looking to be the auditors at the Digital Service or the Inspector Generals, but it's really kind of a three-part way that you could think of it is, okay, here's what the test is going to be on. Give them the test. Here's where we see state security needing to be for the year. Here's what the test is going to be, and then here's the answer key. So if they embrace the program, we get them there. Some initiatives on the technology side that we're looking to expand on in this year is, first, really going down a true state identity and multi-factor security solution. So right now, each state agency, you have your identity there, but there's no real identity from a security perspective that follows the employee across each state entity. There's no centralization of that. There's no roll-on, roll-out, role-based accesses. So looking to improve some of that. Following the data, we talked about following the assets, which we already did, and we're working to roll out, but following the data, following the application, where is that data going? What applications across the state are using it? Is it going to a cloud service? Is it going to a data center? Do the agency CIOs, do the agency ISMs really know where their data and application is? And can we quantify the risk to that as it? And then I'll say last, focusing on realizing that security is not just informational technology, but it's also operational technology. So whether it's things like building security systems, door badge access, water treatment centers, all of that operational technology, making sure that is embraced, planned for, and pulled into our cyber planning, our rules-making process, and our plans to secure the state. To close, Mr. Chair, I'll say the team is small, but we are looking to put the pedal to the metal. We realize cybersecurity is a contact sport. I think we're addressing this with a startup mentality. A big part of why I said yes to be here is it's an unprecedented opportunity, and we're in kind of the initial stages of rolling out this cybersecurity to the state as a whole. The governor's support, your legislative support, has made a big part of this possible, and I think it's really positioned the free state of Florida to be in a leadership spot in security. Like I said, we get inquiries all the time from different states on, wow, what are you guys doing with this? What's your legislature going here? Where are you guys going next? And we're really focusing on the teams continuing to get better and better. So again, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to take any questions. I will say, I apologize in advance if I can't answer with any specifics in this public forum. Happy to dive into them. But again, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So I'll say, when we got hit with the hurricane, he was actually down setting up Starlinks, running around. He went to churches, he went to firehouses. They had hundreds and hundreds of Starlinks that they just deployed. You don't really see government move that fast. The night before the hurricane hit, CIO Grant, He sent me a note and said, hey, we got this missing persons website up. It's ready to go. So just the speed in which we can move, and I know you guys moved very fast. Just started a year ago. Everything would be zero if you were presenting then. Now it's, you know, we're getting some data. You're working with other agencies. What can we do to help you move that fast when it comes to moving forward on the you know, your cybersecurity posture for the state? What are some things that we can do to help you move quicker?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Mr. Chair. It's interesting. In an emergency environment, I would say bureaucracy kind of takes a back seat to operations. I mean, you still got to, you know, follow the law and do what's right, but you're answerable on like a, you know, hourly basis in a state of emergency, and some of that bureaucracy gets to be pushed to the side a little bit more. Whereas the day-to-day operations, it's not the case as much. So any areas where we could streamline that, I think helps out a lot. In our understanding, you know, kind of takes three things to be successful. Funding, which I think we've seen a tremendous amount of support in, access to funding, and understanding legislative intent for those funds. So just as anytime clarity can be given there, bureaucracy can be minimized, and empowerment can be given to run fast, because it's, you know, as much progress as we've made, Mr. Chair, it's we're up against the clock, I think, in every way. And the more lights come on, the more we realize we're against the clock.
Yeah, and time is not on our side when it comes to these things. They're happening constantly. I mean, all over the place, from government to critical infrastructure. And it's important that we start to move a little bit faster. So we'll just figure that out and however we can support. Rep. Alvarez.
Mr. Chair, first a point of order. I wish we would ask the presenter if he could actually have a little bit of passion for his subject. I got to tell you, you know, it's not a fun thing for us, and the way you present it makes it palatable, understandable, and the sense of urgency is absolutely received. So thank you very much. From my perspective, is important. Coming from a sheriff's office world, has there ever been a thought on a fusion center kind of model? Like we started to realize that crime didn't stay in one county, and we understand that, you know, our attacks against the state of Florida will cross all sorts of lines. Has that model ever been approached? Is that even a good idea?
Yeah, Representative, thank you for the question. I would say in some ways it exists now, but not enough. So FDLE has regional operational centers, I believe 7 throughout the state. At the Digital Service, we don't. We have 1 center right now, but we are exploring how we could have incident response teams. And some of this you could do virtual, but some of it helps to be on the ground, to take images, to get in there and look, you know, face-to-face with the members having it. So we're working it from that aspect, and we have some initiatives that we would like to see move forward there. And then we do have a kind of, we're setting up our Cybersecurity Operations Center at Digital Service. We expect that to be a place where fusion can happen for cyber. So we have seats there for, you know, our National Guard partners, for our FDLE partners, for potentially federal partners where it makes sense. So I would say it's in the nascent steps of getting there, but an area for improvement.
So here's my ask of you, knowing that you're in the early steps, but knowing the sense of urgency that we have, I would like to empower you to come back and say, look, we're there. The invitation only kind of role doesn't work, and we could use some teeth, because if that's what this committee, or that we need to run a bill that says at a fusion center, every head of every agency must be there, and it's deposited and run out of your office, then I think that's smart. When we understand the battle space has changed necessarily from conventional into cyber, and if we're trying to be on the front and we're already behind, I think it's important that our relationship, especially with this committee, be that fluid, and we would love to hear from you again if it's not going as fast and as effective as you think it is. There's nothing embarrassing about that. In fact, it's embarrassing when we know we have a problem and we don't do anything about it. That's where the real problem is going to come from. So I'm telling you from my perspective, and Chair, I'm not speaking on your behalf, but I would love to see you back here saying, we tried it, I need help, please help me in these areas, and let us listen, let us get it for you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. CIO, it's great to see you here in Tallahassee. I think last time I was with you, you were being deployed overseas. Thank you for your presentation. And I guess I had some similar questions. It's like, you're in front of the whole committee here. Here's the opportunity. Certainly, there's got to be a laundry list of things that you need to make your job more efficient, to do the job better. If I was to ask you if you're understaffed or overstaffed, you'd probably say you could use a couple more staff, which means more money. But can you provide us with that laundry list? Because, we get together again next year. That's a long time to wait now. And we saw, as Mr. Roberts was saying, what can happen, when we're open to attack. So if you could identify a few of those things on the laundry list, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Caruso. I appreciate that, and it is good to see you again. I think I'll take a two-part answer to that. First, I would love to kind of talk to the team and come back with a list of items. I don't want to shoot from the hip on needs, but anything that lets us move fast, streamline, get the solutions out there, partner with and when I say agencies, whether it's state agencies or local agencies, the legislation has been great. Legislators have been great in really empowering what's out there. Just making sure we're in a spot that we're carrying out what the law that you guys put forward. More people helps for sure. The ability to fill all those people when they're there helps a lot. It's a tight market out there for cybersecurity. It's tough to get talent that's not already in Tallahassee to Tallahassee. We've recruited aggressively to do that. And again, I think the legislature has been very empowering in that front. But I would just say knocking down any roadblocks where we know we need to act fast is the first thing that comes to mind. And I'll talk to the team and we'll take that as a takeaway to come back ASAP or separately offline.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. In another realm here, you indicated that with regards to agency collaboration, I've got to think has to be the most frustrating thing that 23 agencies only partially integrate with you, and some hardly at all. I included in that 23, and if you could elaborate on how it would be more beneficial to the state if they all collaborated 100% with you, like the 9 did, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. At the Digital Service, we're service oriented, and we try to be, partners first and as collaborative as we can be. But at the end of the day, the governor wants a single picture of what the security, what the security posture is for the state. You guys want a secure, you want to know what's going on across every agency, not just some agencies, right? What's the picture? I think there's encouragement that could be given there, and we're pushing it. Part of our press with the scorecards and some of the metrics that you'll see there is to highlight the partners that we do have in agencies, but also say, hey, we don't have a complete picture until we have a complete picture. So, I think I'll go back and come back with an answer, but my gut feeling is, some teeth to the need for collaboration probably lights a fire to tie in a little bit more. And we know we're going to, you know, that's just the state agencies. In this next year, we're also spinning out the local integration. So it'll probably be rinse and repeat at the local level all over again.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you scare me with the word encouragement, you know, because we might need a lot more teeth than encouragement. Thank you.
Rep. Pantone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. Quick question. Are the salaries associated with just 70 FTEs sufficient to recruit and retain the talent and the expertise that you need?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Tough question, really tough question to answer. I would say as a digital service, we're positioned ahead of most, if not all, state agencies for the state of Florida in some of the leeway we have there. But even with that positioning, that still puts us pretty far behind the public sector in many ways. And that's just talking the numbers. Then you combine that with, you know, there. It's a tough work environment. So you have people working in their pajamas, getting paid, you know, 2X, 3X, what they can. And a lot of, I would say, our employees are there, not because they have to be, but because they want to be. That, you know, I don't think we'll ever close the gap between the commercial side and state government. I don't think we would even ask to close that gap fully. But if we could shrink that gap, it helps. And I think of one instance comes to mind. So one of the spots that's still open is the incident response manager who reports to our deputy chief information security officer on the operations side. And it was on a business-related social media network, and I saw a person who was running an incident response team at a credit union not too far from us in Pensacola, Navy-based, so you can figure out which one it is. And I was like, man, this guy is probably the kind of guy we want. And I was like, hey, you know, would you be interested? And then I went to his profile, and funny, like, so he had a job reporting to him. The job reporting to him, salary cap, was above where we could bring him at in. So it does show some of the differentiation. And some of the things on that were like, oh, you know, expected to come into the office 4 days a month. I almost said week, 4 days a week. So it's a tough comparison. I don't want to... You know, I don't want to be crying sour grapes. We've really seen a lot of support from the legislature, but the gap between private industry and government, and also between state government and sometimes local, some of the local governments can't compete at all, and some of the local governments outcompete us significantly. So there's a lot of have and has nots.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So will that be part of your request when you get with your people in terms of maybe increasing salaries or?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I think it's a global request, and I would defer to our policy team on the exact way that question's in there, but it's definitely a need. It's a need for cybersecurity workers at the digital service. It's honestly a need for IT and cybersecurity folks across the state enterprise. And I mean, there's that, and inflation doesn't help either, you know. So, you know what, a dollar doesn't buy what it used to on top of everything else with that gap.
Rep. Campbell, you recognized?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Rogers, for the information. That was a lot of information that you presented. And I don't know, and I just want to say it just for a point of order, just to cover my own. But if you could provide this committee with the 2022 cybersecurity strategy and planning that you have, so that we can kind of sit back and review it and see how that relates to everything we're going to be doing in 23, that would be something that would be very helpful for all of us here sitting on the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I think we could find a way to certainly make that happen. Shouldn't be an issue. And it brings up, you know, some of the information in there is protected by Florida Statute 119. So something we're working on is what does that reporting, how do we get the proper information to the decision makers, the policy experts, and because there's some stuff that is proper to be conducted out in the public, and then there's other spots, much like the sheriff's office was saying, we don't want to give our adversaries the playbook on how to exploit us. So we should be able to get that. We're also working on the 2023 plan. Our shop is working on that. So when that is done, we could also get that over, but that we should be able to make that happen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so how soon would you be able to get that information to us?
You're recognized.
Yep, Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. I would think pretty soon. Again, let me check with my shop, but we have it. So just getting it sent up to the right spot and distributed. And we consider there's not, you know, in the Navy space, the military space, you have top secret SRI. We don't have a clear classification system, and this is something we may want to look to kind of develop across the state, but we'll make sure the right people have it, self-included representative.
Rep. Castle, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for putting me in a castle. It's okay. and thank you very much for your presentation. Following up on some of the questioning that Representative Caruso presented, obviously this is a complicated space, and what your agency's trying to do is work with other state departments to help get them up to speed. Do you have any insight as to what the hesitation or the resistance for working with your agency more fully and completely is, so we can maybe work on fixing that in this committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Good question. I think some of it is almost goes back to history, as I opened with. Like, I think we're the fifth instantiation of state technology. And in a lot of these agencies, you have a bureaucracy that has seen technology come, technology go, technology come, technology go. So we have never been in a spot to be as successful as we are with the governor's support, with your support, with the legislature support, with the cyber bills that we've had put in place. The framework is there. I think it's on us to execute the policy and the kind of the playbook that you've set in front of us. I mean, before I took this job, just looking at the state cybersecurity bill, it's like, man, Florida we're primed to do it right. And now pulling in the locals. I think it's just pushing, nudging, knocking down bureaucracy on your side. I'm sure we'll have some policy asks that come in through the proper channels. And I'll certainly go back to the team again and see if there's anything more formal that we could present.
Rep. McFarland.
Thank you, Chair. Jeremy, can you talk a little bit about, I'm interested in like the RFP process statewide. So Department of Management Services typically handles any like tech contract across the state or anything hardware or software. Can you talk a little bit about how Florida Digital Service has worked themselves into that RFP process? Number one, specifically for DMS contracts, and then number two, in other agencies as well.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. I want to be careful because I'm not a purchasing or like there's whole departments that are based around procurement, so I don't want to misspeak on the procurement side. Several of the initiatives that we're looking at is first putting into what we call the cybersecurity rule, Rule 60 GG2, the proper, you know, how do we make sure that what is being purchased is secure, it does not possibly have ties to foreign entities, and that goes for software, hardware, operational technologies, and so on. Yes, that included. One of the people on my team serves on the policy for drones specifically. But a lot of that is, you know, what does right look like from sensors that are, whether they're in the air or out on the network or in buildings anyway. I will say that we try to, you know, time is not on our side, as the chair said. So we looked, when it comes to procurement, we look to move as fast as we can to fail fast. We have a don't get locked into any single vendor paradigm. So, you have one vendor, they own you. You have two vendors, you own them. Not that we own the vendors, but we just don't want to put all our eggs in one basket. And to really bring the best of breed solutions, wherever they may be, on any specific problem set, if that makes sense.
What's to stop any of our state agencies right now from contracting with a provider that has poor cybersecurity standards? So, for example, what's to stop, pick an agency like Department of Education, from contracting with a provider that deals with student data that doesn't require two-factor authentication for login, for a made-up example?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for the question. It's an area that we're working, I would say, to address. There are some safeguards in the rule as it exists now, but it is due for, and this isn't a rulemaking process, it's due for an update, without a doubt. There are some items that are in the Department of Financial Services that provide some safeguards, things like your data can't, Florida resident data can't be hosted outside of the contiguous 48 states, but it's an area that we are looking to improve on, I would say, the rule and regulation side.
I think you quoted the rule there, but the rule number I don't think will mean anything to us. When was that rule issued, and are you planning to update that rulemaking?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. So it is... it was issued a while ago. It was opened and closed to just kind of bring it in line with some of the other rules, particularly the architecture, the enterprise architecture rule, which is another rule that we added. It is, I'll have to check again with my policy side, but it is due to be open soon, and we plan to comprehensively touch it from soup to nuts. In a lot of ways, it kind of just seeks to, if you look at the rule as it stands now, it kind of regurgitates some of the NIST cybersecurity framework and the NISC risk management framework, the RMF. Those are both great frameworks, but it's not really addressing what I would say is the legislative intent, the governor's direction on where we need to go in leading in a state. So it's due to be opened up, if it's not open already, in the near future, and we expect to rewrite it almost completely.
And DMS has rulemaking authority, or do you do it? Sorry, Florida Digital Service has rulemaking authority. You go through DMS.
We go through DMS. So we are kind of the SME, the subject matter experts, with DMS kind of running the process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, and so I wanted to weigh in. First of all, thank you for your service to the people of Boca, including my mother, and to our country and now to our state. I have a question. The term soup to nuts, is that a technical term? They all have way better questions than me, but I wanted to thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair LaMarca. It's a good question. I don't think that's a technical term, but I was told to avoid technical jargon as much as I can, so I'm... the rule's due for a rewrite. Thank you.
All right, any other questions? Well, we appreciate your time and your passion. I saw your passion when you were just setting up, these satellite dishes all over Southwest Florida for us, and we appreciate it. I do want to say, I know that Jamie Grant, our CIO, has been knocking on doors of universities trying to get a fellowship program because of talent's an issue. The private sector pays a significant amount more than government entities, and we need that talent to be able to help us increase our posture, ensure all of our critical infrastructure is secure, and we appreciate all your effort. And I think you have some do-outs. There's a lot of folks asking, we got lists, we need a list, we want to set up regional centers, and I think all of these things have been in conversation before to be able to help support you guys' efforts and make sure all of our constituents are safe, our data safe, and we can continue to do our thing. So we appreciate. Members, that concludes our agenda for today. If there are no other matters, Then Rep. Yeager moves that we rise. Without objection, we are done.